Thank you for listening to The Real Deal with Damian Adams. This is Real Sports Talk for the Real Sports Fan. And I definitely appreciate all you Real Sports fans who are listening right now. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please do me a huge favor and leave this podcast a 5-star rating. That 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, that 5-star rating review will definitely be appreciated. If you're listening on any other platform, that could be Podomatic, iHeartRadio, wherever, please share from that platform so that your friends and family can see the podcast, listen to the podcast, love the podcast, subscribe, and then share with their friends and family. I'm trying to get this podcast to the highest levels of podcastivity, and I need your help to get there. It'll be truly, truly appreciated. Got a, I wouldn't say big time episode, but it's a very informative episode of The Real Deal of Damian Adams. Some basketball, some boxing, and we'll get into it. So I want to start with basketball today. As we're in the NBA playoffs, we're in the midst of the first round, and we had our first series come to an end as the Minnesota Timberwolves swept the Phoenix Suns 4-0 in a series that wasn't really competitive. Games 1, 2, and 3 were all won pretty easily by the Timberwolves. And then in Game 4, the Suns really tried to show up. Both Kevin Durant and Devin Booker had big games, but it wasn't enough as Anthony Edwards led the Timberwolves, along with Cat having a big game as well, to win in a clutch situation, which really shows you a lot about Timberwolves. Not only were they able to pull away from the Suns and dominate a team that has Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, and Bradley Beal, but even in the game where Kevin Durant and Devin Booker show up and play their best and do everything they can, they were still able to come out on top because their superstar, Anthony Edwards, showed up and showed out. And there's so much to take away from this series and from the season for the Suns. But let's start with the small things, then expand out to the bigger picture. So looking at this series, mentioned, Timberwolves win it pretty easily. 3 of the 4 games aren't close. It's shocking because during the regular season, the Suns had the Timberwolves number. And in those games, Anthony Edwards struggled. Karl-Anthony Towns struggled with foul trouble. And they couldn't stop the offense for Phoenix. And coming into this year, that was the thing that had the Suns as one of the favorites to come out of the Western Conference, is that you can't guard all these guys. KD, we all know, is one of the best scorers of all time. Devin Booker is one of the best scorers in the league today. Bradley Beal, as a third option, should be unfair because we've seen him lead the league in scoring before. And it's not like he's some old man, right? And it took them a while to gel. Now, earlier this year, I was working for a different company covering the Phoenix Suns. And in the preseason, I know it's the preseason, but in the preseason, they showed signs of greatness. Where it was like, oh, wow. You can see where they would just get into these runs. And like, okay, this is going to be where one of those teams where they're going to be in a close game and then boom, 15-0 run. Boom. 20-6 run. They're going to have those type of runs where they can just take off. Kind of like Denver, where Denver is never really out of the game because you know they can have a run where they just take off and truly find themselves in a game. And we thought we would get that with this team. But for some reason, it just never came together. Now, I mentioned preseason. Preseason looks like that team is gelling, the offense is coming together, they're going to take off out of the gates. And then Bradley Beal has a back issue. So to start the season, you're not even getting the top three guys together. As Bradley Beal's dealing with the back issue, Devin Booker has some injuries as well. So ironically, the most healthy guy on the team this season was Kevin Durant out of the big three, right? Kevin Durant played how many games this year? Going back and look at it now. So Kevin Durant played 75 games. So he played the second most games on the team right behind Yusef Nurkic, who played 76. So they never really get into a rhythm to start the year. But by the end of the year, Bradley Beal's playing better. He ended the season with nice stats. Bradley Beal ended the season averaging 18.2 points per game, 5 assists, 4.4 rebounds per game, shooting 51% from the floor, 43% from three. And we all know what Devin Booker and what Kevin Durant did. Both of those guys would be All-NBA this year. So you have a team that seems like they're gelling towards the end of the season. They beat the Timberwolves all three times pretty easily. And they go into this playoff series. They're not able to do anything with the Timberwolves. So watching the series, one thing that really stood out was Anthony Edwards was the best guy on the floor. He's the best guy out of the four superstars, five, you count Kaz as a superstar, that was on the floor. So when you do your rankings, Anthony Edwards definitely has to be above Cat, of course, but also Devin Booker and Kevin Durant, because he's clearly a notch above those guys because of what he can do on both ends of the floor. Even in game two, where he was struggling offensively, he still made an impact on the defensive end. And in the games where he has both going, it's unreal. Game four is unreal. He scores 40 points and is playing lockup defense. No one on Phoenix can do that. Which kind of brings me to the big picture of what really went wrong. So we go back to the beginning of the year. They fire Monty Williams, hire Frank Vogel. I don't think Monty Williams deserved to be fired, but as a new owner, he wants his own guy. He gets Frank Vogel. Have no problem with the Frank Vogel hire. Frank Vogel, I believe, is a good coach. I even wrote an article saying how I believe he's the right guy for the job because of his previous experiences and being able to bring what he learned from Indiana, from Orlando, from the Lakers to the Suns, right? And that never came to fruition because he didn't have the personnel to bring what he learned and implement it. I think that's a big thing. When he was having success in Indiana, he had great defenders like a young Paul George, Roy Hibbert at the rim. With the Lakers, he had Alex Caruso, who's still one of the best perimeter defenders in the league. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who's a great perimeter defender, very underrated. Big reason why Denver is where it is right now, or where they are right now. He also had Anthony Davis, who's a great defensive player. And don't forget, Dwight Howard was on that team. JaVale McGee, like, he had rim protectors. No rim protectors on his team. Yusef Nurkic is a very big individual, but he's not protecting the rim. You're not scared of him when you go inside. And he also doesn't finish like a big man, right? 7 feet tall, 300 pounds, but doesn't finish like that. Only time he really would finish strong and have these big games is against Nikola Jokic. I remember going to a couple of games back-to-back earlier this year where they played against Denver. Yusef Nurkic looks like Akeem Olajuwon out there, scoring buckets, getting stops. I'm like, yo, where's this Nurkic at every game? So the next night they play against Sacramento. He has a huge size advantage over Domantas Sabonis, their center, but for some reason can't finish on the inside. And that inconsistency was there all season for him. And it's ironic because at Media Day, they talked about fit. You heard that word a lot, fit, where it was about what fit best with this team. And ironically, they didn't fit together. You can't just throw together talent and think it's going to work, especially when that talent all scores in the same or a very similar fashion. Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, and Bradley Beal all want to score in the mid-range. That's where they thrive. So that limits your spacing. It limits the amount of opportunities you have to go to where you want to get to, go to your spots. And then reports come out that Kevin Durant was frustrated with his role in the offense. There were times where if Devin Booker's cooking, Devin Booker works the best in pick and roll. So you need your other two guys to space. And then when it came to this series, that lack of creativity on the offensive end really showed his head, because the Timberwolves are a great defensive team. And it spoke to the pressure and the defense that the Minnesota Timberwolves were able to bring in this series because of Jaden McDaniels, Anthony Edwards, Cat, even with the foul trouble, playing good defense. Rudy Gobert, we know he can do. Even guys come off the bench, Naz Reid and N'Keal Alexander-Walker, those guys all came in playing really good defense. And that physical defense, the fact that they can handle the amount of space that Phoenix can create from a theory standpoint, really showed up. So now the question is, who do you blame? Who do you blame for this going wrong? And the first guy who's going to get blamed is Frank Vogel. It's unfortunate. Like I said earlier, I thought he was a good hire. I didn't agree with the firing of Monty Williams, but once you fire him, I thought Frank Vogel was a good hire after that. And Frank Vogel, from all accounts, seems like to be a really good guy. I remember when we were first doing training camp and you're in this media scrum where you see in the locker room sometimes where you just have a bunch of microphones in the player's face and everybody's asking questions. Same thing here, right? And I was trying to get my question in, but people kept cutting me off. And the PR guy's like, hey, Frank's done. And as he's getting up, he said, oh no, this guy had a question too. And he made sure I got my question in, which he didn't have to do. Really cool of him to do that. And he showed that type of just general kindness throughout my time covering the team. So I have no bones to pick with Frank Vogel, but being honest, when you look at the team that was the worst fourth quarter team in the league throughout the season, and then to go against a team in Minnesota that you had success against during the regular season, and to just get mollywopped like this, it looks like he's going to be the guy who's the scapegoat if Matt Ishbia doesn't mind paying another coach. Now, if Frank Vogel stays, something's got to happen to the roster. What do you do in this case with the roster? They're locked into Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, and Bradley Beal for some years. So when you're locked into these contracts for years to come, now you got to think about trades. They also just locked into Grayson Allen. Grayson Allen had an amazing year this year. Shot the skin off the ball. Deserves his extension. So that's your core. How do you somehow get to a good place? Don't have any draft picks. They trade away all their draft picks to get Kevin Durant. Some to get Bradley Beal. Now, people's first reaction may be, well, why don't you just trade Bradley Beal? Bradley Beal is the most expensive of the three. Even though he's the third option, he's making the most money. Shout out to him and his agent for milking the Washington Wizards for every single penny they could. He did that. And then finally, it was time for him to go. No problem with that. But with that, he also got a no trade clause, which he held on to once he was able to temporarily give it up to get traded. He still had it in his contract. So he's not going anywhere unless he wants to go somewhere. And there's no telling how he's adapted to being in Phoenix. People love being out here. I've been out here now since 2017. Like it a lot. I get why athletes like it, especially if they're in the Scottsdale area. It's an area where they can be, I'm not going to say fully out and about, but they're not going to be bothered the way they would be in other cities. So he might have adapted and liked it. I don't know. If he does, he's not going anywhere. Devin Booker's the franchise. If you trade Devin Booker, you're sending a message that we are starting over. This is brand new, and we have to go in a different direction. Kevin Durant, at, you know, going into his age 36 season next year, how much can you get for him? He's still amazing. Still probably going to be second team All-NBA this year. But how long does that last? If you're a team that's thinking about trading for him, how much are you willing to give up for a guy going into age 36 season? It's going to slow down eventually. And he hasn't shown that his game can translate into playoff success if he's not on an already made team. Golden State was already made had been to back-to-back finals when he joined, and they won back-to-back championships with him. He was just a fit in piece. He fit into their puzzle. Can you build a puzzle around Kevin Durant? At this age, I wouldn't want to take that risk as another team. And how do you know he fits into what you have now? Some people have brought up OKC as an option. OKC has this young team that looks like they all work well together. So how do you even risk that? And who do you trade for OKC? Of course, we were going to say Josh Giddey. Josh Giddey is a good player. Struggles with his jump shot, but a good player, a good playmaker. And as the lead guard on the team, I think he'd be really good. But the situation he had early this year outside of basketball is going to make it hard for teams to trade for him. So I don't know if Phoenix would take that on, right? OKC does have a million picks. So they can literally trade 7-8 picks without worrying about it. And they need to trade some picks because you can't pick all those people. You can't have that many people on your squad when you already have a full roster. So they literally need to trade some of these picks away. They can't use them all. So if they're willing, I don't know what the max is on picks. I know that they have the limits on back-to-back years. You can get around that by doing pick swaps. And the Phoenix Suns don't have picks to swap. So they can't even do that. They're in a really bad situation as far as trying to be better. And you have Devin Booker, who's in his prime right now, who's probably, you know, I'm guessing not really happy with what's going on. So I just don't know how they move forward. My thing is, my guess would be trading Kevin Durant. And even on another podcast, I made a bold prediction that they might blow it up. But then I thought about it, how do they blow it up? Unless you're bold enough to trade Devin Booker and say we're starting over. But Suns fans have to look back now and think, man, we had a really good team that made it to the finals with Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, Chris Paul, DeAndre Ayton. And all those guys are gone. And now we're getting swept in the first round. Life comes at you fast in the NBA. It does. So we're going to take our first music break when we come back. Was this the most disappointing super team, quote unquote, of all time? Like that tease right there, that was real professional, right? So we're going to take our first music break and come back and talk about that.
Making anxious people mad, they turn their heads and they're like, oh, oh, oh. Don't know what to tell you, I can't help you, I don't give a fuck at all, oh, oh. People looking like they seen a ghost, they can't believe what they just saw, oh, oh. And my bitch is down when she walks in, they turn their heads and they're like, oh, oh, oh. I just came from Crucial, I threw 40, that's an adios. I may not be perfect, but shit, I'm probably close. I'm off the coast, my fragrance work the night shift in the day shift. Angel in the day, demon at night, she likes to shape shift. Take it when I'm gone, that's why I'm splurging. Baby got the ball up, no surprise, we met in Berlin. Fucked a millionaire, then you a virgin. Me, myself, and now I don't know someone more deserving. Pull up, make it anxious, people mad, they turn their heads and they like, oh, oh, oh. Don't know what to tell you, I can't help you, I don't give a fuck at all, oh, oh. People looking like they seen a ghost, they can't believe what they just saw, oh, oh. And my bitch is down when she walks in, they turn their heads and they like, oh, oh, oh. Fuck you think this was, you might see me in this club. Faded off the goose, not shooters, cause then we'd be sitting ducks. Really though, I like to be at the house, getting rich as fuck. Slouch, when you talk thousands, bring up millions, then I'm sitting up. Moving back, cause you doing bad, I ain't cool with that. Couple in my crew, Atlanta Brave with the St. Louis hat. Who is that, doing the impossible, young Neo? Who's that? Me, myself, and I, just a trio. We gon' pull up, make it end. Just people mad, they turn their heads and they like, oh, wow, wow. Don't know what to tell you, I can't help you, I don't give a fuck at all. Wow, wow. People looking like they seen a ghost, they can't believe what they just saw. Wow, wow. And my bitch is down when she walks in, they turn their heads and they like, oh, wow, wow.
Welcome back to The Real Deal with Damian Adams. Hopefully you enjoyed that music break. So, before the break I asked, are the Phoenix Suns, the 2023-24 Phoenix Suns, the most disappointing super team of all time? And I guess before we get into my list, or just going through some of the super teams that have not worked out, we have to define the term super team. Because you can make an argument that super teams have been around forever, right? The 80s Lakers, we have Magic Johnson, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, James Worthy, Byron Scott, all on the same team, that could be considered a super team. You think about some of the 90s Bulls, when you have Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Dennis Rodman, all in the same squad, super team. If you think about in the 2000s, did we really have a super team in the 2000s before the Celtics? Some people say the Celtics really started the trend when they traded for Kevin Garnett, acquired Ray Allen to go along with Paul Pierce. Then, of course, the big one was when LeBron and Chris Bosh joined Dwayne Wade. And then after that, of course, you got Kevin Durant joining Golden State. You got Kevin Durant joining Kyrie and James Harden in Brooklyn. And there's some other ones in there that kind of get lost in history, right? And I think a super team by today's standards is a team that brings together three all-star caliber players who are still playing at a high level. So you can say Boston was a super team. They brought together Ray Allen, Paul Pierce, and Kevin Garnett. And all those guys are still playing at an all-star level. Now, they were all past their quote-unquote primes by that point. But they still have a few years left to be great. And they did that. They only won one championship, which people kind of make fun of because it seems like they ride out this championship for the longest. But that team was good for a significant amount of years beyond just that championship. Made it to the finals in 2010. You could argue the 2019 would have made the finals if KD doesn't get hurt. And they even gave Miami a run for their money in the early 2010s. So they wouldn't be on this list of disappointing super teams. Now, a team that people forget about is the late 90s Houston Rockets. So in the mid-90s, when Michael Jordan took his sabbatical to play baseball, the Houston Rockets took advantage and won two championships. And in that second championship, they added Clyde Drexler, who was no longer in his prime, was still pretty good, to go along with Hakeem Olajuwon, who I will argue to the end of my days is criminally underrated, and I believe is the second best center of all time. After that, they were able to add Charles Barkley to the squad. And then even add Scottie Pippen a couple years later. But by the time they added Pippen, Hakeem Olajuwon was no longer this dominant force. Clyde was on his last legs. And Charles Barkley had like a year or two left. So they were disappointing. They didn't make it past, I want to say, the second round. Or they made it to the Western Conference Finals. With Charles, Hakeem, and Clyde. They lost to the Jazz. When they added Scotty, it was too late at that point, and they weren't good anymore. So you can't really say they're as disappointing as this Suns team because they had the year where they made it to the Western Conference Finals. And John Stockton made a classic game winner to get the Jazz to the finals that year. Of course, the Jazz went on to lose to the Chicago Bulls. So that team can't be as disappointing because they were already older and they still made a deep playoff run. The 03-04 Lakers. Now this is Kobe and Shaq. Kobe is already a top five player at this point. Shaq is still a top five guy. They add veterans, Gary Payton, Karl Malone. A lot of people remember this as a disappointing year, but they made it to the finals, y'all. And they lost to Detroit. That Detroit Pistons team is one of the great defensive teams of all time. And they still made it to the finals before they lost. So you can't put them in the same category as this team. Then you think about the 2012-2013 Lakers, where they added Dwight Howard and Steve Nash to go along with Kobe Bryant and Pau Gasol. This team was kind of doomed from the start. Steve Nash was well over the hill. He was no longer an all-star caliber player at that point. And his back was messed up. He didn't play most of the year because of it. Dwight Howard got hurt during the year, played through it. And a lot of people don't give Dwight credit for that. Played through it and still led the league in rebounds. Still was, you know, 20-12, even with a messed up labrum. And Kobe trying to carry the team and get him over the hump towards Achilles late in the season. So he went into the playoffs with no Kobe, just Dwight Howard and company, and got swept in the first round. The result may be the same, but it's not as disappointing because going into the year, you knew Steve Nash was on his last legs, and their best player in Kobe wasn't playing in the playoffs. Now you think about the Brooklyn Nets with KD, James Harden, and Kyrie. This wasn't as disappointing in the, like, on hindsight, because they only played 16 games together. 16, because of all stuff that was going along. You gotta remember, this is, you know, post-COVID, where COVID, you know, used to have all the restrictions and players were mandated to get the vaccine. Kyrie Irving didn't want to do it. Looking back on it, looks like Kyrie was in the right to not want to take the vaccine and had every right to say, yo, I don't want to do that. I don't want to put that in my body. And because of it, he couldn't play home games. And this was right after they lost in the second round to Milwaukee. Famously, KD had his toe in the line and could have won the game if his toe was behind the line, right? So because they got so close to making it to a conference finals, it's hard to say this team was the most disappointing, especially when you look at the next year where Kyrie had all stuff going on, then James Harden got traded. So they weren't together long enough to be a true disappointment. And in the time they were together, they looked like they were unstoppable when healthy. They just couldn't stay healthy. You look at the Lakers when they decided to get Russell Westbrook to go alongside LeBron James and Anthony Davis. This was doomed from the start. I remember making a video, it might still be on my Instagram or social media pages, when they acquired Russell Westbrook. And I said, I'm not sure this is going to work out because LeBron still needs space around him. Russell Westbrook likes to have the ball in his hands and needs space around him. Now, credit to Russell Westbrook, he's adjusted throughout these years in the latter half of his career, now coming off the bench, and has been a quality bench player for the Clippers. And AD also is somebody who doesn't provide space for you. He's not a great shooter. Can be great at times, especially in the mid-range, but doesn't provide that space that you need for LeBron and Russell Westbrook to work at the same time. And they were very disappointed. They didn't even make the playoffs that first year together. So because they didn't make the playoffs, is that the most disappointing team? And it would be if they didn't already have a championship. LeBron and AD already had a championship from the 2020 season, the bubble season. And I don't understand why they didn't try their best to keep that roster together. When you had Ice Caruso and KCP and Dwight Howard and all those guys they had, why not try to keep that roster together after you win a championship? Why go in a totally different direction? Doesn't make sense. But looking at all those teams, and now including the 2023-24 Phoenix Suns, it's very hard to say any of those teams that I've mentioned were more disappointing than this Phoenix Suns team. Now, some people could point to this team and say they didn't have much outside of their big three. And Bradley Beal was dealing with injuries all year. He still ended up playing 53 games. And still, I mentioned the stats earlier, still was very efficient. KD and Book will be all NBA. Grayson Allen had his best year of his career, led to a big contract for him. Eric Gordon was supposed to be like the steal that they got to add to this roster. He played okay, but he wasn't the best. Bol Bol was somebody who I thought would have a bigger impact. He's a fan favorite. The fans out here in Phoenix love him, but he never got into a rhythm with the team where he was getting time on a consistent basis. And that's something maybe you can blame Frank Vogel for. They traded away other players that you thought was going to be helpful, like Watanabe was somebody who you thought would be helpful with his three-point shooting. Josh Okogie didn't get traded away, still on the squad, but he was somebody who you thought for sure would be very good around these players. Just spot up, hit a couple threes here and there. Good offensive rebounder, excellent defender. But his offense was so limited that he ended up going from a starter. I remember having debates about who would be a starter between him and Grayson Allen. And Josh Okogie not only went from being a starter, but went from being a starter to a guy who was getting bench minutes to a guy who was not playing at all. And that's a very, very big drop-off for somebody who you expect to be an impact guy on your team. Nasir Little, somebody who's getting minutes, went to not getting minutes at all. So they never really found a rotation that they felt comfortable with all year. And that's something that you can point to and try to blame Vogel for. You can blame the roster construction. But you only can do so much when your third option is making $50 million. And they went over the cap significantly. Like, they're going to suffer those penalties. That's another reason why it's going to be so hard for this team to try to revamp instead of going full rebuild. So when you think about all those things and how they're going to be set going forward, this is the most disappointing super team of all time. Devin Booker in his prime. Bradley Beal should still be in his prime. He's only 30 years old. Kevin Durant's 35, but playing at an all-time great level. You got a great year from Grayson Allen, but couldn't execute in the fourth quarter, both regular season and playoffs. And come playoff time, couldn't get the ball to your guys in their spots. Bradley Beal was horrible during this series, especially the last game. There's no way around it. This is the most disappointing super team of all time. And it's not really close. So we're going to take our last break. When we come back, going to talk some boxing. I didn't do a show last week. I was traveling, so I didn't get to do the episode. So we'll talk a little bit about Ryan Garcia, Devin Haney, but also we'll preview Canelo Alvarez versus Jaime Munguia. You know, Cinco de Mayo's coming up. If you're a boxing fan, you know that means it's Canelo Alvarez time. So we'll preview that and also talk about the aftermath of Ryan Garcia, Devin Haney. We'll be right back.
I'm my chip on, man. I got this, yeah. Can't be touched, can't be stopped, can't be moved.
jump up and get your bitches to blues. They gon' see you on a hot damn move. And I ain't even nothing. Nigga, you took the crime, not a print, not a hot damn groove. Beating these niggas down is what I came to do, and I ain't playing about a hot damn move. Shaking you niggas down if you ain't paying your dues. We passing up your block and ooh. My screws are loose. Don't call my hand, cause you gon' make me act a hot damn fool. Dead discussion. You will not win, cause I will not lose.
Can't be touched, can't be stopped.
Welcome back to The Real Deal with Damian Adams. Hopefully you enjoyed that music break. So I didn't get to do the show last week, traveling around a little bit. So I didn't get to give you my extended reaction to Ryan Garcia's win over Devin Haney. I did a brief video on social media talking about it, put my score up, and I scored the fight 112-112. And people killed me. Oh, they killed me for that. Because they're not actually scoring a fight. They're using what I call the ooh scoring system. The person who makes you go ooh, ooh, ooh more than the other wins the fight, in their opinion. And this is not me looking down upon casual fans. It's me wanting to ask casual fans if they recognize that they're casual fans of the sport. Like when it comes to the UFC, I'm a casual fan. So I will defer to those who are diehard fans or who cover the sport when it comes to judging fights, questions about what's going on in the sport, things of that nature. I'm a very casual baseball fan. So you're not going to hear me on here breaking down a pitcher's changeup to fastball ratio, because I don't know what I'm talking about. But when it comes to boxing, because most people have been in a fistfight before, they believe they know what's going on in a boxing ring. And some fights are going to be very, very simple, to where you could just go by, this person did more damage than this person, they win. Some fights are like that. Not very many, though. Most boxing matches, you have to go round by round to really see who won the fight. Because, again, it's a boxing match. It's not just a street fight. And that's what you saw in this one. You saw that Ryan Garcia is a better fighter than Devin Haney. But in a boxing match, which is round by round, Devin Haney has an argument that he won. I see a lot of people going back and watching the fight that I follow on social media for boxing saying you can make a real argument that he won the fight. And one of the judges scored it 112-112. So I have no problem with casual fans disagreeing with me, because boxing needs casual fans to keep the sport going. The casual fans who tuned in for Ryan Garcia, who bought the fight because of all the antics that Garcia did prior to the fight, keep the fight and the game going. But when it comes to the discourse, they can ruin it for someone like myself, because I want to have real conversations about it and see why you scored it this way or scored it that way. Don't just come to me and say, well, Garcia bust his ass, so Garcia won going away. No. Because Ryan Garcia won four rounds going away. The first, the seventh, the tenth, and the 11th. Outside of those four rounds, you can make a strong argument for eight rounds to go to Devin Haney. Rounds 2 through 5 were definitely Haney. Round 6, Ryan Garcia came out strong for the first 15, 20 seconds. Did nothing after that. So if you're scoring the full round, it should go to Haney. Garcia went crazy in round 7, lost a point. And before I continue, let me just harp on that real quick. A lot of people were upset that the referee took a point away from Garcia for hitting after the break. I was like, why didn't you give him a warning? My guy, Chris Negron, from the Sideline Guys, made a really good point when I was on this podcast that people forget about. The referee meets with these fighters before the fight to go over the rules. And these guys have been in boxing their whole lives, from amateur to professional. They've been in hundreds of fights. They know the rules. So this isn't somebody who didn't know they did something wrong. It's not like the kid coloring on the wall and not knowing that's going to be really hard for the parents to wash out. You shouldn't have done that. They don't know any better. These are adults who have been boxing their whole lives. He knows he's not supposed to hit on the break, especially when the referee is between you guys. He did it blatantly. He blatantly broke the rule. So if you're going to blatantly break the rule, I have the right to blatantly take a point from you. You can't rob a bank and they'd be like, yo, that was my first time robbing the bank, though. Do I get a warning? No, because you know you're not supposed to rob a bank. So let's stop with expecting referees to give a warning when the fighter or participant has blatantly broke a rule. No, you can get kicked out. Same thing in the NBA, where if a player commits a flagrant 2 foul, you don't need a warning. You did something blatant that was against the rules of a game you've been playing your whole life and you're an adult now. Get kicked out. So I hate this warning culture or this culture of not holding people accountable for something they did because you expect leniency right away. Nah, he deserved to have that point taken away. And that was a big part of my scorecard being 112-112. And when you're scoring boxing round by round the way it's supposed to be scored, this fight was close. Ryan Garcia had the much bigger moments, but Devin Haney was more consistent throughout the fight. Kind of reminded me of Amanda Serrano versus Katie Taylor the first time around. I'm so glad we're getting that again on July 20th. Great fight. Amanda Serrano had the more ooh moments. If you're judging by the ooh scoring card, who made you go ooh, ooh, who made you do that more? It was Amanda Serrano. But Katie Taylor was much more consistent throughout the fight in one more round. She outboxed Amanda Serrano. That's what boxing is. It's about who boxes better. Now, if you have somebody who has knockout power and can nullify being outboxed, like a Deontay Wilder and those type of guys, okay then. But if you have the power advantage and you're not able to knock out your opponent, you leave yourself to losing a fight where it seems like you did more damage. That can happen. And when the fight ended, I thought, oh man, this is going to be the decision that people are going to be upset about, because I thought Devin Haney was going to squeak out a win. Especially when that first score was announced, 112-112, I was like, oh. So for the fans who disagree with me so harshly, again, I have no problem with you disagreeing. But come to me with real scores. Come to me with a real point of view that really shows why you felt this way. Not just, oh, this person made me say ooh more, so they must have won the fight. Now, the question is, what's next for Ryan Garcia and Devin Haney? Now, in a perfect world, what's next would be a rematch. Because it would be great to see if Devin could adjust to the power that Ryan Garcia has and avoid the left hook, and they come in with a different game plan. Does Ryan adjust to whatever adjustments Devin Haney makes? It'll be very interesting to see. But we don't always get those rematches that we want because of business and whatnot. So if we don't get a rematch, what's next for each fighter? I saw Chris Algieri talking about Ryan Garcia should move up. Ryan Garcia did miss weight by 3 pounds. That does matter because you don't drain yourself as much as your opponent did to make weight. And it does matter. But again, you still gotta give Ryan Garcia all the credit in the world. So if he moves up to 147, he could take on the winner of Jerron Boots Ennis versus Cody Crawley. Big money fight. You expect Boots to win. You get Boots versus Garcia. Big time money fight. Big time money fight. You also have Conor Benn. Big time fight right there. Conor Benn is somebody who's looking for an opponent. You have, somehow Adrian Broner is still in the 147 pound rankings at WBA. Imagine the press conferences between those two. I really like Roman Villa as an opponent. Roman Villa, somebody who took on Boots and somehow lasted for a very long time that with Boots. Can definitely take a punch. Keeps coming forward. That'll be a very entertaining fight. If he stays at 140, Teofimo Lopez would be huge. Amazing fight. You also have Josh Taylor there. If Josh Taylor can beat Jack Catterall and stays at 140, that's another fight you can make there. He has all the options in the world because he's the A-side. He's proven that he can sell tickets. And now, even the next fight, he can't pull the same act again, but he's proved himself in the ring to be a star attraction. So where he won't have to do all those things outside the ring this time. So he has whatever he wants to do, he can do. For Devin Haney, the winner of Josh Taylor, Jack Catterall, very good option. Jose Ramirez, big option there. Richardson Hitchens, a good option. He needs somebody who is a top level fighter that he can beat and kind of restore himself, and then maybe get that rematch against Garcia if it's not there right away. If he wants to move up to 147, he has options as well. Both these guys have amazing options going forward. So thank you guys for the great fight. I would love a rematch, but if not, there's great options either way for both of those guys. So now let's talk a little bit about Jaime Munguia versus Canelo Alvarez going down on May 4th, so this Saturday. Cinco de Mayo weekend, you have two Mexican superstars going against each other. Should do well. Now, a lot of people are going into this fight with a level of disappointment, which makes sense, right? Because you have Canelo Alvarez not taking on David Benavidez. David Benavidez definitely earned his shot at Canelo Alvarez. Canelo, for whatever reason, to me, it looks like he's ducking. But it's tough to say that about somebody who has the resume Canelo has. But, bro, there's no excuse. There's no excuse at this point to not make the fight against David Benavidez. None. Because Benavidez, even though he's with PBC, I'm pretty sure they can make something happen with the zone, make it work out. Because that fight would generate so much money that both sides would be happy. But instead, he's taking on Jaime Munguia. Jaime Munguia, I've been critical of him and his team for a long time. I felt like they were avoiding taking on the toughest competition, right? But in his last couple of fights, we've seen him step up in competition and look pretty good. Now, against Sergey Devrinchenko, I thought he lost that fight, but it could have went either way. Very close fight. Fight of the year. Amazing fight. But then against John Ryder. John Ryder went the distance against Canelo. Wasn't really a close fight, but made it tough for Canelo. And then against Jaime Munguia, wasn't able to go the distance. Munguia was able to move in and out of the pocket, use his jab, not get hit by big shots. And it was the best I've seen Jaime Munguia look. If that Jaime Munguia continues to improve and goes in that ring against Canelo, Canelo's going to have issues. Munguia's athletic, he's strong, he can take a good shot. There's going to be times where Munguia wins rounds. And we haven't seen Munguia be hurt. We haven't seen him knocked down or knocked out. Now, we've seen him hurt. Let me rephrase that. We've seen him stunned. But you've never seen him go down. We know Canelo can crack. But is this the same Canelo who's been knocking people out, you know, for the majority of his career at this stage? I don't think so. So the big thing for Canelo in this fight is to get McGee on the defensive and make sure that McGee respects his power. For McGee, he can't be over aggressive. You don't want to get caught, you know, caught by some counter shot from Canelo, some crazy hook. But I got a feeling this fight's gonna be really good. I'm scared to pick McGee in this one, but I might put a little change on him. A little change on him, because I know the odds are definitely gonna be favored for Canelo. So I might put a little change on. Little change on him. Just a little change on Jaime McGee going into this one. I think it's gonna be a really good fight. Decent card. I don't know if it's worth 85. I'm gonna go to a sports bar to watch it. But I don't think fans should go into this one already disappointed. Respect this fight for what it is, because it's gonna be a good one. And we got so much boxing coming up the rest of the month. It's absolutely nuts. But I think that's gonna be a good fight with Canelo winning. I'm going to say by decision. Canelo by decision is my pick there, but it's going to be a good fight where McGee has great moments. Great moments. Hopefully you enjoyed this episode of The Real Deal with Damian Adams. Really enjoy just coming to you guys. And I want to say a special thank you to a few people that I've been talking to about joining their networks. And it's really, you don't need the affirmation, but it's definitely something to be said for your peers, showing how much they respect your work and how much they appreciate what you do and how they're a fan of what you do. I'm a fan of so many people in this space, and it's dope to hear that back. And you know, like, oh, I'm still doing good work. What I'm doing is worth it. It's really dope. So make sure you follow me to see that good work at The Real Deal WDA on all social media platforms. Make sure you share this podcast with everybody so I could get to that level of success I want to get to. I appreciate you guys. And until next time, go real or go home.